Welcome to Positioning 365 Beyond Seated, presented to you by Ultimate Medical, the makers of Easy Standard Zing Standards and Activate Bath Safety Equipment. I'm Marian Girardi, a clinical education specialist here at Ultimate Medical, a physical therapist, and a resident certified ATP. I will be your host for today's discussion. My co-host today is a member of our clinical advisory board, Doug Levine. Doug has been a physical therapist since 1997 and has primarily focused on pediatrics. Since starting Growing Places Therapy in 2006, he and his company have served over 600 children and their families, providing pediatric physical, occupational, and speech therapies in the home, school, and daycare settings. He has provided education and trainings with Cure Duchenne in the area of Duchenne's muscular dystrophy for therapists and families here in the United States and internationally since 2016. Welcome, Doug. Today we will be discussing how standing frames can facilitate a child with spina bifida's therapy program. Our guest today is Larissa Bomberg. Larissa is a pediatric physical therapist in Oregon. Last year she started Snowflake Warriors Physical Therapy, a clinic specializing in therapy for children with spina bifida. Larissa is passionate about providing the best services possible for her clients, regardless of any possible barriers. Welcome, Larissa.
Thank you.
Larissa, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice?
Yeah. Like you said, I've been practicing pediatrics for a little over 7 years now. I kind of fell into it working in rural Eastern Oregon, and realizing that parents were traveling 4 to 5 hours one way to receive therapy services. So I talked to my manager and asked if we could trial a PEDS program. And within 6 months, it became hugely successful. So through that process, I kind of figured out my why to pediatrics was facilitating parents and helping them, empower them through this medical process and never feeling like they should be alone. Within doing that, I kind of fell into working with kids with spina bifida and realizing that they're an underserved population in the Pacific Northwest. And with the support of a lot of my SB parents, got encouragement to open Snowflake Warriors Physical Therapy and really help them find the best care that they can for their kiddos with the most up-to-date treatment strategies. So that's kind of how I wound up here with what I've been doing. So like you said, it's been about a year and it's been a wonderful process, just a true blessing.
What do you find are the unique aspects of treating a child with spina bifida?
You know, no two are the same. So it's the snowflake diagnosis for a reason. I've treated several children, same level of injury, and not a single one of them present with the same challenge, which I think, like for me, makes it really fun. I like puzzles. I like figuring out how to get them successful in what they want to do. My programs are very focused on their family goals and the child's goals. So with them each being unique with unique muscle activation or contractures, I get to really streamline a program that's only meant for them. And then I just feel like they're the happiest kids on the planet. I don't know how else to explain it, but when they achieve a goal or get to play like other kiddos play, they just light up and everybody around them lights up. So they're just a wonderful group to work with.
What are the ages you're working with?
Birth through right now, I think my oldest kiddo is 11. I have been asked to do some adult work, so I'm probably going to start looking into that. There's really not a lot of support for adults with SB out there, and I didn't realize it until Spina Bifida Month, just a few months ago, that they really don't have any physical therapists that work with them. So I'm looking at getting into working with adults, so stay tuned on that one.
Wow, that sounds exciting. Why do you feel that supported standing should be included in the child's therapy program?
There's just so many benefits to standing that I think we forget about. Anybody who can stand doesn't really think about what it does for our body. So with this population, I feel like really the most impactful things that we get from a therapy standpoint is bone mineral density improvements. It's so common for this population to get fractures. I've got several kiddos that have gotten fractures just doing normal activities. For instance, crawling up and down stairs when they're a few years old, that pressure on their tibia just results in fractures. I have one kiddo that fractured his femur when he was crawling around his house and his leg got stuck on the other side of the door and he didn't notice. And he was strong enough to pull hard enough that he broke his leg. So that one was a hard one. So I really feel like getting them in standing frames as early as possible just to help decrease that calcium reabsorption is huge for these kiddos. And then something that I didn't really think about that's happened with that is their long bones grow faster. So typically SB patients have disproportionate bodies where their legs are really short and their feet are really short. And what I found with these kids is when we get them in the standing frame, within 1 to 2 months, they need new AFOs and they've gone up a pant size or two, which you would think parents would be upset about, but they get really excited. And I've got some of the older kiddos say they feel better because they look more like their peers. So that's a big one. Another big focus that I've got is preventing contractures or increasing range of motion if they already have contractures, because most of the time they're in their wheelchairs throughout the day. In our society, being on the floor and playing on the floor in public places isn't as well as accepted, even though that's really where they're at. So they're in their chairs a lot, and we have really bad hip flexion contractures that they compensate with lordosis and knee flexion contractures. So I really use the standing frames a lot for a stretching protocol for them, especially if we can get them in like a sit to stand style, like the Bantam, that they can control how much they're standing and that stretch for themselves. It empowers them to do their own program, but then also they get an appropriate level of stretch versus being forced into a stander that's flat and having to accommodate with pillows. So I do a lot of work with range of motion and find that it's a lot better than just manual techniques alone. And then this population also has a lot of hip dysplasia, whether they have hip dysplasia or have fully dislocated by the time I see them. It just depends on their muscle activation and their medical history with what their hips look like. But with that, sticking them in a stander immediately is very important if they just have dysplasia, and we can get them in that 30 to 60 degrees of abduction, increasing that congruency in the hip and giving them the best shot of really maintaining hip stability for ambulation if that's something that is within their ability to achieve in the future. We do use it. I mean, there's the bowel and bladder benefits. I just feel like in this population, it hasn't made as much of an impact as my other kiddos, like with CP or other diagnoses like that. We do use gravity. Some parents report that it helps with motility. And I think that's more with them being active in their like abdominal muscles in that supported position. And then something that I didn't think about really until I work a lot with speech language pathologists. And the big thing that we've seen that I really like is improvements in cognition in the social engagement. You know, as PTs, we're thinking movement, range of motion, muscle activation, bowel programs, and seeing these kids engage in an upright position is probably my favorite thing to see. They just have improved support. Their fine motor control improves. They get eye-to-eye contact with peers. One of my favorites is them getting to hug their parents in standing for the first time. I don't think I've had a single kiddo that the second that they get in a stander, they don't ask for a hug. It's the most adorable thing. Yeah, it's so sweet. And I think it's something that we don't think about, right? We hug people standing all the time. But these kiddos, it's their first time getting to hug somebody standing up. So I think our world happens in standing, and it's just so important to give them that opportunity to learn and grow in that position. So,
wow, this is a lot. I know I'd read a study that was published out of CPUP in Sweden a couple of years ago, and it made the comment that doing a retrospective study, they found that children who use standers were 4 times less likely to have bone fractures. And it seems it's the same it's like bone is bone, despite the neurological. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we learn in grad school that the only way to keep those bones strong and develop them is through weight bearing and weight bearing activities, stairs, jumping. And that's something that these kiddos just don't have that opportunity to do. So we need to give them the best opportunity possible to get weight through their bones and really get that development. I do a lot with NiStim and getting muscle activation in the muscles that they can't control themselves. And if we can get a good contraction through that muscle, I just feel like that's extra help, right? They're getting that pull through the bony attachments, and they're going to have more typical growth and development of the bone, but also a little bit more strength through it. And, you know, thinking about it, I didn't think about it before this, but any kid that I've had in a standing frame, they have not had a fracture since getting the standing frame. So I think there's a lot to it.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, Larissa, I want to kind of explore that a little bit further. You were talking about, you know, using the standard for alignment and weight bearing. I certainly wouldn't consider myself an expert in spina bifida, but I've worked with a number of kids throughout the years. And one of the most challenging things I've found with standing, even though standers now are so much more flexible in terms of adjustments, but with this population, especially as they get a little bit older with spina bifida, you know, there's could be a large rib hump or increased lordosis or really some asymmetries that are difficult to accommodate through the adjustments of the stander. So what have you found that you've been successful with that to be able to make that standing experience comfortable for that person?
That's a great question. Right now I don't have any kiddos that have a significant rib hump that I'm working with them in a stander. I do have one kiddo that does have significant scoliosis that another therapist is doing the standing framework. But the biggest thing I've found is their contractures being so severe that we have to use this like a sit to stand style stander. I had a 7-year-old that came in and I don't know the brand of stander, but it was just a flat, like supine stander. They'd lay him on it and they had to use several bolsters behind his knees and then behind his back to try and accommodate for his contractures. And then they'd put him in standing and he would get a migraine. And the big risk with that is that a lot of these kiddos have hydrocephalus. And so anytime there's a headache or migraine, they have to assume shunt malfunction. Sure. And again, for where I'm at right now, we're very rural. That's a life flight out. So we have to life flight them to Portland or Boise for treatment. So with this kid, luckily his parents were very on top of it. And they take him out of the stander and within 20 minutes, symptoms would go away. So we switched him to a sit to stand that allowed them to only bring him as high as his contractures would allow. And his headaches have completely resolved. With that, they're more compliant with that stander now. So he had 20 degrees improvement within 2 months of using a stander. So that was really, really big for him. He does have lordosis, and that is where I feel like that's the hardest part, right? Getting in those hip flexors, the psoas, and getting those to release. So we are accommodating him a little bit with where we place the belly strap to try and get his back supported and they give him a little bit more support through the chest so that he can feel like he can relax and activate his core. And with a lot of those kiddos with lordosis, I add the NiStim to the abdominal muscles while they're in the stander so that we get good abdominal activation, postural control while they're standing. So it's not necessarily just the stander being supporting him, but getting that active muscle activation to get them into that proper alignment. I do have another kiddo that has scoliosis, not a significant rib hump, but he does have a TLSO that he wears. And just depending on parent comfort, sometimes I leave the TLSO on while he's in the stander so that they can get that alignment. But I would prefer them to be out of it because we can do a lot more active work in the stander.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So It sounds like there's, especially with this population, that there's higher degree from the therapist of creativity needed, because it's just, yeah. You might not be able to just make adjustments through the standard, but the benefits are so great that just need to try to do what you can to bolsters or towels or, like you're saying, other things going on at the same time, like the MyStim or things like that, just to get the standing in.
Yeah, definitely a lot of creativity. I mean, I feel the companies work really hard to make these adjustable for every kiddo, right? I feel you can tell, and there's so many variety of standards out there because each kid's need is so different. But I do feel like no matter which one we use, not one standard has every single ideal piece we need. So there is the creativity and adjustment. And I feel like that adjustment sometimes is needed day to day, just based on how they're presenting that day, what's going on. So yeah, I feel like we do have to be really creative as therapists to make sure that our kid is supported exactly in their need, in their way, and then teaching the family how to do that so we get that compliance at home as well.
Yeah, agreed.
And Larissa, you mentioned that with the sit-to-stands, the children, and I'm assuming their caregivers, are able to adjust the amount of extension that they get. How important do you feel that is? And what do the kids feel like when they do it themselves?
You know, this is a bit new to me. We've just gotten our first approved standards for them to be able to adjust the pressure themselves, like within the last 3 months. And before that, I never really thought about it, but I'm working with a lot of like 6 to 8 year olds. And then like I said, an 11-year-old, and they're empowered when they get to do it themselves. The 7-year-old we worked on transferring in, he needs minimal assistance to get from his chair into the stander, put all of the alignments in place. We've taught him how to do it all himself and then raise himself into standing. And I've got a 7-year-old, and let me tell you, he wants to do it himself. He does not need me. And this boy, he would tell us, he's like, nope, I got this. Let me do it. I got this. And just seeing that was amazing, because these kiddos, they don't get to do it themselves a lot. They need help propelling themselves. If they get tired, they need help reaching counters. This kiddo in particular, he just got a bathroom set up that he can brush his own teeth. And that was the biggest thing for his mom. They came in so excited. He brushed his own teeth today. We didn't even know he was doing it. You know, they don't get that opportunity to do it on their own. So to do this with a stander is so empowering for them, but then also removes a level of responsibility for the parents. Their kid can go in and do their home program on their own. They don't need to go in and remind them, get them set up, stop their day, stop doing dinner to go and take care of their kiddo. They can just go in and do it. And so we're seeing a lot of really good benefit and confidence from these kiddos by being able to do it on their own. And then removing that level of learned helplessness that I think just naturally happens with this population, because they have to ask for help so often throughout their day.
And it sounds like they want to do it.
Yes, absolutely. They want to do it.
Yeah, I think it's compliance is such a big issue with any population in terms of using a stander. And yes, from the medical provider's standpoint, it's great when we can get 10 degrees more of range of motion, or we can get, you know, there's something very clinical or objective that we can achieve from that. But I think in terms of compliance from the parent or the caregiver standpoint, or even the person, if they can do something with that, if they can give their parent a hug, if they can brush their teeth by themselves, that goes, I think, such a long way in terms of getting that compliance of continued use.
Yeah, I agree. It's one thing I learned early in my career working with children, is that if it doesn't have a meaning for them, or there is no benefit to them, they're not going to do it. And I remember years when I first started out trying to do like manual stretching, and the parents and everybody fighting. But this sounds like your kids are looking forward to getting up in the stand or getting in a position and actually getting that stretch as actually a secondary benefit to them, because the stretch isn't their benefit. Their activities that they can do in standing seems to be. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think about this. The patients don't care what our goals are, right? We're thinking range of motion, bone development, all of that. They don't care. They want to go play. Can they play in the stander? That's the question. Can they interact with their friends? All the time I could put the kids in the stander and we go and play basketball or we play Zoom ball. Like, it's all games to them. But because it's a game, I can keep them in the stander for 45 to 50 minutes without even a fuss. They forget they're in it. They forget they're getting the stretch. All they're doing is playing. I'm doing postural education or postural realignment, muscle activation, core activation, weight shifting, strengthening. And they're like, yeah, we're playing Zoom ball today. So I think that's huge, is making sure that they're getting what they need from the social and play standpoint so that we get that compliance and we get that time in the stander while we're also getting the benefit that they need for their life, right? Their whole life. What we do now sets them up for the future. But I think the trick in pediatrics is that they don't see that part. They just see the fun.
Agreed. It's got to be fun or else it's not going to happen and you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I think what you said is the most important part with pediatrics. If it's not meaningful, if it's not fun, if there's not some sort of activity or outcome that's attached to it, kids are just not going to want to do it. So I think standing offers them, it just really opens the world to them. Like you were saying, I mean, it's, you know, no longer is everything at floor level or wheelchair level for them anymore, but now we're at a standing level. And I think there's just enormous benefits in just every area to that.
Larissa, you've mentioned you've had lots of different successes with using standing as part of your program. Can you highlight a few more for us?
Yeah, I think my favorite success, and I was thinking about this, it's not necessarily with a standing frame, but a different standing position. I had two patients in the clinic that were getting their walkers adjusted, so their gait trainers adjusted, and one was in the lobby, and then I was bringing one out just to swap them, and one little girl had spina bifida, and the other little girl had cerebral palsy, and it was the first time that they had seen another child in the exact same device. And they came out and ran right to each other, slammed the walkers into each other, and tried to give each other hugs, and were giving each other high fives and talking. And it was just babbling like crazy in the lobby. And both of the parents, the moms were crying. I was crying. We had the front staff just crying because they had never had that interaction before. One girl was using it at the school a lot, so she had seen her peers in it, but they weren't in a device. And to see that change happen, it was just magical. Like, brings tears to my eyes every time I think about it. And as a reminder that this is why we do that, why we do what we do. It's not easy getting devices for kiddos and families, but it's so important for them. And yeah, it's probably my favorite memory of having kids in a standing position. But also that mobility position, getting them up, getting them independently moving. So that is definitely the closest one to my heart.
What have been some of your greatest challenges when using standing equipment in treating your clients? I know we've talked about postural asymmetries. What are some of the other challenges you see?
Right now, the biggest challenges I feel like I have are more with parent compliance with the standing frames and getting it in during their day. I think none of us would deny that we live in a very busy world. There's a lot to be done. And especially in these situations, most of these kids have a pretty extensive evening program. Most of them have a bowel or bladder program that they have to follow that takes up about an hour of their evening. And then we're asking them to add an hour to an hour and a half of standing into their day. So that tends to be the biggest challenge I feel like we have, like for PTs, but also for families, is getting that in. And then right now we're having, I feel like the insurance piece is quite a bit of a struggle. Living in Oregon, we're very fortunate that our Oregon health plan covers a lot of standing frames. Like they are very great with getting that on-time mobility piece and getting our patients equipment. But our private insurance is a little bit harder, so it's taking longer to get standing frames. So we're having to start the process earlier. And it's kind of there's a learning curve to it, making sure that we're checking the right boxes for the right companies. I feel like that's a lot more of a challenge for me than getting kids to fit into a stander or getting the stander fitted to them appropriately.
Yes, insurance, the bane of our existence.
Yeah, can't do therapy without it, but it is a challenge.
And I've read quite a few of the insurance guidelines for standing, and I'm seeing in some of them the trend that the child has to be greater than 12 months of age. Are you seeing that, or are you able to get them? Like, how young do you really want to start?
That's a great question. Because of the on-time mobility, I really do want to start them at 9 months, but it takes us 4 to 6 months to get a standing frame, to get through, you know, the fitting process, the demo, the paperwork, and then insurance approval, and then to get it back. So I have not been able to get that process even submitted until 12 months. So it's been about a year and a half is the earliest I've gotten somebody into a standing frame. And that was a fight. And I think I started with her. She was probably 6 or 8 months old.
Do you think part of the fight for standing with children with spina bifida is that most of the research is done on cerebral palsy and there's not a generalized acceptance that standing is beneficial to SB?
I've never really thought about that. I'm not sure if I've never had insurance deny it because of their diagnosis. So I'm not sure if they're looking that closely into it. When I do my write-up, I just make sure to cite the research about pretty much about the bone mineral density, anything that's going to cost insurance more, right? So increased ER visits because of fractures, possible casting, surgical repair for hip dysplasia or dislocations. So I just really hit anything that's going to cost them more a little bit harder. And yeah, I've never had them denied just because of their medical diagnosis.
Yeah. And that's been my experience as well in Texas, is that it's not anything where it's gotten denied because of the diagnosis or because maybe there's not a potential for walking or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. We've had pretty good luck. We definitely still have to justify everything and kind of justify the heck out of it and every component. But I guess we've either been pretty lucky or they're pretty generous with their approvals here.
Well, that's comforting to know. It's been rare, but I have seen a couple standards denied because the comment from the insurance company was there is no research that this will benefit this diagnosis. And I'm like, really? It doesn't seem people can generalize.
Yeah, that's very shocking to me because the benefit doesn't change based off of their code, in my opinion. Like you said, with the bone development, you said something about it. Bone is bone, not nerve. So.
Right. And issues with digestion, circulation, and blood pressure regulation from not getting up and down all the time, that doesn't necessarily change greatly among the different diagnoses either.
Agreed.
No, I agree. It was a very unique denial.
We did have a stretch in Oregon where insurances were, it almost appeared like they were doing a blanket denial. Any submissions were just getting denied. And on our end, we don't know if that's actually what's going on or if they're looking at it. But we're finding that if we're denied once, a resubmission, even if we do minimal changing, just bolding or highlighting the reasoning for the need, we're now getting approvals with the second submission. So I do tell therapists, I get a lot of people that call from other areas and they're like, what are you doing to get approval? Don't take one denial as, you know, written in stone. Insurance, I'm sure, hates me. I'm very annoying. I resubmit everything. It does take longer. The kids will need me remeasured, but often I find that they'll approve that second appeal. And, you know, they want to save money. It's a business for them. So they're going to be strict at what they look at. And if we are persistent, I feel like they're going to look at it a little bit harder. And I have a lot more success with that second application.
That's kind of funny you said about the insurance companies hating you. I always wondered if, because I'm the same way, I'm persistent. I'll write 12 letters if needed. I always wondered if they're like a picture of me above people's, like their desk.
Yes, I feel the same way. I tell my parents all the time, they're like, what if they deny? I was like, it's okay. I love being on the phone with insurance and really fighting them, because to deny a child the right to stand, like, no one wants to do that. So yeah. I'm like, I'll fight for you. Don't worry about it.
And what are the parents' reactions when their children stand for the first time?
There's no words. They light up to see them get so excited. It's just like seeing their kid take a step for the first time. They are just glowing and excited. I think, you know, the hardest part for them is that they can't take the stander home with them that day, that they have to wait. But it's amazing. And their siblings' responses, getting to play with their siblings standing, it's the true joy of our jobs, I think.
It's so true. To see them achieve something that they couldn't before was just so satisfying. Does anybody have anything else they want to add?
I did just have a little bit that I wanted to add.
Okay.
For therapists that are working with this wonderful spina bifida group of kiddos, I just have to say, don't be afraid. I feel like the most common complaint that I get from parents is that their therapists they're hesitant. They're afraid to push their child to the level that they need to progress and have success. And I totally get it. It's a daunting diagnosis. There's so many factors to consider with shunts and bowel programs and lack of sensation and fear of fracturing your patient. I mean, there is just so many factors to consider. It's scary, especially if you're new to the group, but don't be afraid. These kids can be pushed much further than we think. They progress rapidly, majority of them, because of the miracle of medicine and being able to get shunts in early. They're cognitively intact and they want to develop and grow at the rate of their peers. And I feel like we are just the vessel to push them in that direction and help them get to where their goals are. And to do that, I think we have to push them a little bit harder than we think is possible. So don't be afraid. Work with these kids just as you'd work with any other group of kiddos, and really focus on the family goals. It may seem like a little achievement to us, but to the parents and to the kiddo, those goals are life-changing. They're worth the fight for sure. So that's just something I wanted to throw out there. They're fantastic to work with. You won't get any happier group of kiddos, I don't think. They're all just wonderful. So, yeah.
Well said. I love that.
I agree. At times, we hold back because of what we're not aware of and what we're not comfortable with. But you can, if you push, you can get there.
Absolutely.
I can't thank you both enough for joining us and diving into therapy for children with spina bifida, which I think is a topic that could probably have a little more traction in our therapy circles, and hopefully we will get some of it. Today's episode, we learned that facilitating standing for children with spina bifida can have positive effects on bone mineral density. Larissa also shared a story where a child grew the long bones grew faster and the pant size increased so that they're looking more like their typical developing peers. We found that it helps with all the benefits of standing, bowel and bladder to some point, range of motion. But a big piece of it also is the social emotional effect that it has on the children, their ability to be in standing and do things on their own. Again, thank you so much for our guest, Larissa Bromberger, for sharing her experiences, and for my co-host, Doug Levine, for joining us today. If you have any questions about this or other podcasts, please email education@ultimatemedical.com, ultimatemedical.com. For more information about our products and our course catalog, please visit our website, www.ultimatemedical.com. Thanks, everyone. For this episode of Ultimate Medical's Positioning 365, Beyond Seating. Again, I want to thank Larissa and Doug for joining us